Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome to The Inspired Evolution. I'm your humble host, Amra Sandhu, and you're tuning in to a conscious conversation designed to help you grow. Our mission here is simple. It's for you to live your purpose, live your best life, live the life you love. This podcast is sponsored by Enthusiasm for Life, by Great Creation itself. Keep the good vibes flowing for myself and yourself. Do us a solid, subscribe to the Inspired Evolution podcast on YouTube, the home of the Inspired Evolution podcast. Now sit back, relax, open your mind, open your heart to this conversation and stay inspired. Keep evolving. And it is a kind and humble and ridiculously epic treat to be here today. We've got with us Dr. David Hamilton. David, how are you, sir?
I'm fantastic. Yeah, how are you today? Thanks. First of all, thanks for having me on. But, you know, how are you today?
I am amazing. Like I said to you before, I'm better for having you here. This is an absolute treat for us. For those that are tuning in for David for the first time, give me a quick sec. He is now the author of 11 books, yeah, including this gorgeous little Amazon bestseller called The Five Side Effects of Kindness. And we're totally going to go there today, but he also recently wrote a book, which I love this title, Why Woo-Woo Works. And we're going to unpack some of that today as well. David, I love your energy, what you're putting out in the world. I love your books. Thank you so much. And I really just want to start there with the question. It seems like when I'm researching your work that we're actually wired for kindness. We're actually like some part of our biology is like, yeah, it's got the chemicals to support it. A lot of the research that you do, I know you've got a PhD in chemistry and you go all the way to the nth degree in terms of what's going in our inner world with these interactions that are happening in our outer world through kindness. Can you tell us a little bit about that realization and your findings in that space?
Yeah, well, first of all, absolutely, you're right. We are absolutely wired. We are genetically wired for kindness. In fact, do you know the kindness genes? And I, when I say kindness genes, I mean the genes that play a central role in how kindness has physiological effects. Those are some of the oldest in the human genome, about 500 million years old and 3.5 minutes. No, not the 3.5 minutes.
Like, that's awfully precise. Yeah.
About 500 million years old, give or take a million. Right?
Yeah, okay. Give or take 3.5 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
You know, that sounded funnier in my head.
It sounded funny to me. Don't stress.
In fact, I appreciate you're humouring me.
Yeah, well, no, that's amazing. So, that's incredible. So that the most ancient parts of ourselves are actually geared toward kindness.
Absolutely. It's funny because a lot of people think of us as having, you know, being a selfish species. But in actual fact, what's kept us going so long is our capacity to to cooperate, to help each other, even to love and to have compassion. I mean, you can see it actually in parents caring for their young. That's something that's genetically wired. If we didn't have that capacity for compassion and patience and, you know, and in the wider sense and sense of community and cooperation, human species wouldn't be here today. So those genes are absolutely crucial. But literally, our kindness genes are some of our oldest genes in the genome. And it's absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, I love that. And it's such an ode to existence, isn't it? The way that everything is sort of, and it makes sense when I hear you say it that way, you know, like everything that society, culture, human beings, tribes, how important connection is and how much of a lubricant for connection kindness really is, and that we're actually wired for that kindness because we're wired for connection. I totally resonate with that. And I will ask for the audience what the side effects of kindness are. But before we go there, I would love to find out, if we are so wired for kindness, like you said, it's the most ancient part of ourselves, why is it so scarce, do you feel, in today's society? Do you feel that, or is that just my perspective on the world? Because maybe I'll preframe this with a little bit. Like this year, I set an intention for myself every year. This year it was simplicity. And the year before it was actually kindness, where I came across some of your work, yeah? Mm-hmm. And it was actually, I hate to admit this, but honestly, it was way harder than I actually thought it was going to be. In fact, when I set the intention for kindness and trying to be more kind and do small acts of kindness, I actually was way more aware initially of how it was like meditation, you know, so when you first start meditating, it's like you start seeing all the busyness of your mind. I started first identifying how much there was just space, like how many spaces I was unkind in, which sounds a bit intense when I put it that way, but it was actually kind of difficult to embrace kindness. And so going on that journey to ask you, like, what do you think? Like, is it something that is it just me that struggles with kindness, or do you see there's other people struggling with it too? And if so, why is it so hard if it's something that's so innate to us?
I think a lot of us struggle with it. You know, our deepest nature is kindness, is to love, is compassion. But sometimes when, you know, we are also wired for self-preservation. And so we have these two parts of us. And so what happens in our lives as we go through, as challenges occur in our lives, we feel threats to our survival. It's not actual threats, but that's how our consciousness, how our nervous system perceives them as threats. And so what happens is we essentially, we almost cover up the kindness aspect sometimes because we feel like we're just having to survive. And so a lot of people go into kind of fear, and that masks, it just puts a temporary cloud over the kindness. And so it's not that people are not inherently kind, it's just in the moment, in this particular moment, something is blocking it, because it maybe sometimes it can be a consequence of previous life experience, sometimes it can be a consequence of perception of the immediate circumstances, but it's like a cloud. But you know, one metaphor I often use, my partner Elizabeth gave this to me one day. We were on the ground in an aircraft, and it was pouring with rain. It was really cloudy, and we were rising up. And she says, "In a moment, we'll rise above the clouds to a place where the sun's always shining." Mm-hmm. And it's a metaphor for life, really, that people can be presenting their clouds and their storm fronts, but when you poke through the clouds, there's only sunshine. You know, but that's the skill, isn't it? That's the challenge, is to see through that. Is even when someone is presenting a storm front, I think the skill is to recognize that there's sunshine underneath that. And maybe my job right now isn't to react to the storm, but is to know that there's sunshine there. And maybe my job is to pull that out and to perceive that. And if I can perceive the sunshine, then I can actually, the heat of that sunshine that I, because I'm feeding it now, can actually burn off some of the clouds. That's how I sometimes try to work in my life. It's not always easy. I you know, I've written books on kindness, and I struggle with it all the time. You know, just because I can talk about it doesn't mean it's easy, but sometimes knowing or thinking of it in that way does make it a little bit easier.
A little bit, dude. That's an epic metaphor. That is so profound. I love that. It's almost like tuning into the sun above the clouds is like the inner radiance of the person or the being that you're interacting with. And I guess even as you're describing that, you know, you mentioned the word like perpetuation, and I imagine, you know, knowing a little bit about sort of neural pathways and how they get laid down, if we're consistently presenting storm fronts ourselves, we're generally wiring more and more storm fronts. Is that what you would, is that a safe assumption?
Absolutely. You know, the more we behave in certain ways, the more those behaviors become easier. Because literally we are wiring in, we are laying down ever so increasing numbers of those tracks. Just like if I was working out a muscle, the more I work out that muscle, even if I didn't really want to work out that muscle, but it just so happens that that's the way I get up every day, and I get up and I don't mean to, but I just lean to that side. It means that muscle is going to get really strong. I'm not intending for it to get strong, but I'm building up the muscle fiber. So similarly, even when we don't particularly want to behave in a certain way or think in a certain way, if we keep doing it habitually, the muscle, if you like, gets stronger, the neural pathways get more wired, and it becomes just easier to default into that behavior. And that's why sometimes change requires a little bit of conscious effort and then determination to recognize this is how I'm behaving, this is how I have to behave instead, kind of thing.
Yeah, and I think that alludes to the part where I was really struggling, because having that awareness of like, I want to be kind, and then witnessing all the ways that I was just sort of rushing around places, and because I was in a rush, I wasn't slowing down. Kindness was like was a luxury to afford, you know. And I was like, actually, I think I kind of need to slow down a little to sort of take in the moments. And I hate to sort of sound ageist, but I remember the other day I was at the post office sending a friend of mine a gift, and it was this big. Or sending him a hand pan. I'm not sure if that means anything to you, but nonetheless, it was this, I had to duct tape this whole thing and make it really safe and secure. And this lady, she was at least 80. And she stopped and she said, let me help you. And I was just like, oh, it's okay, I can do it. And she was like, no, you're going to be here all day. And she was hilarious, right, this lady. Oh. She's like, you're going to be here all day? Seriously? I'm worried about your day just watching you do this by yourself. Let me help you. What am I doing in my day anyway? And I was like, you're funny. All right, cool. Let's do this. And she held it and I like wrapped it up. Aww. And it was this moment and I could just see how happy it made her. I could see how happy it made me. It was just such a joy to receive. And for me, it was this massive affirmation that actually taking things a little bit slower and being present to, I know I've got to get to that meeting, but actually 5 minutes of my time might really help out this other human here. And we are kind of all in this together. And just the way that lady just did it with so much grace and humor, she sort of poked a little bit of fun at me at the same time as well. I loved it. It was right up my alley. But yeah, do you think that is one of the precursors, like actually in today's modern world, like being so like sped up? Do we think you need to slow down a little bit? Would that be?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I love your honesty saying it, because, you know, people look at you as a teacher and think, you know, I have the same kind of thing. People think, oh, that guy, David's written these books, he must be an expert in all these things. He must be walking about with, you know, fairy dust falling off on a cloud. You know,
why do you think I did this podcast? I just want to scoop some of that.
you know what I mean? We perceive others in certain ways, but in actual fact, we're all just human, having our own challenges. And I have challenges with slowing down as well. And I have challenges with being the best version of myself. And I don't always succeed. I try, but I don't always succeed. But definitely what I love about what you said there is you become aware of yourself. And that's the first step to change, isn't it? We can't change unless we recognize this is how I'm being. And I'm very similar to yourself in that I recognize sometimes that I have to slow down. And when I do, and then an opportunity presents itself to assist with that.
Yeah.
You know, I say the nicest possible way to assist with it. It's a good way to frame it. This is assisting me in my goal to slow down, even though it's a pain in the butt right now. It's assisting me to slow down. But by recognizing that, though, and then having that little interaction, I mean, that flooded your body with what I call kindness hormones, and also flooded her body with kindness hormones. And they have a multitude of beneficial effects. And it's in that little exchange. You said it, you felt good, she felt good. I think sometimes that's what it's all about. It's just that momentary exchange that lifts you. And then it so happens that when we come back to the thing that we needed to do, we're actually now at a more elevated version of ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, so even though we might have lost 5 minutes by being a little bit kind of later, we're actually gaining 45 minutes in terms of the impact that that deeper sense of that shift in consciousness we've just experienced with that interaction puts us into an elevated state. And it means what you're about to do is far more effective, far larger, deeper, grander, wiser. And that, and it's only through learning you recognize that that's what happened, that this is who I've now become, that you think, my goodness, I can use more of these opportunities as they present myself. And maybe it's not about me being busy all the time, but me being a bit more, having richer experiences and bringing more of myself to the table, rather than just rushing to the table, actually bringing myself, more of myself to the table. And that's when these kindness opportunities do actually help to facilitate bringing that richer version of ourselves to the table.
I love that. And I will ask you about the benefits. Promise I will get there. But just in this moment, you mentioned what I was hearing is, you know, us slowing down, and I'm, you know, I'm sort of.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Pulling something out of the ether here, but how important is, I guess, self-kindness then in order to facilitate kindness with others? Like, I'm realizing that as I'm talking to you, it's like, oh, slowing down is actually probably a kindness that I'm affording myself as well, as just one example of a kindness. How is, like, you know, imagine going back to your metaphor with the sun and the storm fronts, like, you know, potentially giving myself the opportunity to recognize that I'm not always the storefront and tuning back into the sun. And yeah, how important is that element of it in your work?
Crucial, actually. And it's, I'm glad you asked that, because I think it's the bit that most people either forget about or struggle with, the self-kindness. And I always say that we have to be kind to ourselves, and there's no particular order. Like, being kind to yourself doesn't mean being kind to myself instead of others. It doesn't actually mean being kind to myself before others, and neither does it mean being kind to myself after I've been kind to others. It doesn't say anything about the sequence at all. And I think that, for me, that means it will vary from person to person, from context to context. You know, sometimes it will be kind. I have to be kind to myself before someone else because I need this to support my mental health. Mm-hmm. But other times, you know, it's okay. I could be kind to you in the moment, then I'll be kind to myself afterwards. And sometimes it's recognizing both at the same time. But there's no particular set sequence, I think, to it. But what is important is always to have in your consciousness, I need to be kind to myself as well as, you know, to always to include yourself. And that can be something so subtle. It can be just pausing for a second and taking a breath. It can be just, you know, being kind to someone else can actually be being kind to yourself when you recognize that this is actually what I need for me. Mm-hmm. So in a sense, I'm being kind to myself at the same time. It's not a selfish thing. It's recognition of the importance of kindness to both of us, and that this little momentary exchange is actually vital for the evolution and the current present time experience of both of us. So, but yeah. Great question. It's so, so important.
No, I appreciate self-kindness. Yeah, and I feel... Yeah, even just being more resourced, as I'm hearing you say that, is like, you know, sometimes with just running off the stormfront analogy again, it's like, you know, I find personally, when I'm less resourced, I'm more inclined to stormfront, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Whereas if I've, you know, and I know this from my daily meditation practice, you know, sitting down, 60 minutes tuning in. It's gorgeous, like what emerges on the other side of that. Some days it's like, oh, gotta get up, baby's happening, stuff's gotta go. It's like coffee in, boom, here we go. And it's like those days are generally more storm fronty in my interactions generally. And it's like, oh, I notice the difference when I'm not connected to my practices, connected to myself and those things that potentially mean self-kindness to me. Yeah, yeah. So there are many benefits. I have tuned into one of them potentially already. I know kindness makes us happier. Tell us a little bit about that one. Some of the benefits of kindness. Let's go there.
Yeah, well, the first major benefit of kindness is supporting our mental health. You know, kindness makes us happier. And, you know, lots of studies ask people to do, like, you know, like a certain number of acts of kindness over the course of either a day, a week, a month or something. And they chart the happiness. Sometimes the studies are, they look at your happiness level before and then after the period of time. Sometimes what they do is they compare your happiness levels with people who are just asked to be their normal selves. But whatever permutation they do the study, whatever version of the study, the results are always the same. Those who are being kind become happier as a consequence of being kind. And one of the, there's a couple of reasons. One is that kindness fiddles, because of how kindness feels, it fiddles around with our brain chemistry. And we generate more of what we call, you know, positive, happy chemicals like dopamine and, you know, serotonin and oxytocin, you know, and these can facilitate happier experiences. But if we keep doing it, what actually happens is we cause physical changes in brain structure. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, what we talked about earlier, you know, working out a muscle. If I was to work out a muscle, two things happen. It becomes firmer. It becomes larger. Now, as you know, when we work out a region of the brain, we also get muscle growth, although neuroscientists don't call it muscle growth. We like to sound more cleverer than that, so we call it neuroplasticity. Yeah. But the idea is much
myelination.
The principle is very similar. Yeah. But here's the thing. What kindness does, we know this from looking at brain changes in people who do what I call kindfulness practices. So they're like mindfulness, but instead of focusing on the breath, we're focusing on kindness. And so, but what happens is they also cause the physical change in the brain, but there's a frontal region that gets affected, but with a slight bias to the left-hand side and a slight movement inwards from the immediate front to the medial regions. Now, what these regions are associated with is happiness and joy. And feeling an elevated state, almost sometimes spiritual states of consciousness. So just like if I worked out that muscle and it became more developed, it means that everything I use that muscle for becomes easier. Well, same way in the brain. If I develop these brain regions, slight bias there, slight deepening there, then everything that these brain regions are used for becomes easier. So being able to extract happiness from the everyday moments of life becomes easier. And that's why in the long term, what you see is not only does kindness boost happiness, but it's actually protective for our mental health against some of the events and circumstances and challenges that occur in our everyday lives.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And I can see how that also then alludes to what you call the second benefit as well, which is like it's really good for our heart, right? Because if our mind is sort of easing out, I'm sure it's having an impact on our emotions. Is that probably where it's impacted?
Yeah. Absolutely. In fact, the principal physiological effects of kindness come because of how kindness feels. You know, like when a person, the one thing I always share with people and get across is physiologically and neurologically speaking, kindness is the opposite of stress. Now, most of us assume that the opposite of stress is peace or it's calm.
Yeah,
or it's
yeah.
That's not the opposite of stress. That's the absence of stress. Close, but it's not the opposite, it's the absence. The opposite of stress in terms of the physiological opposite effects is kindness. Because think about stress hormones are produced, like adrenaline and cortisol, because of how stress feels, not because you're in a stressful situation, because two people can be in the same situation. One feels stress, one doesn't. The one who feels stress will have elevated levels of stress hormones. So they're not produced because of a situation, but because of how it feels. So similarly, when you be kind, you produce kindness. I call them kindness hormones to draw that parallel. But again, they're not produced because you're being kind. They're produced because of how kindness feels, how that momentary sense of connection or elevation or gratitude or just joy or something, how that feels produces kindness hormones. And research shows that they actually have opposite effects. when the kindness hormones go up, the stress hormones come down. When the stress hormones are up, the kindness hormones are down, and it's like a seesaw kind of thing. Now, we know that stress hormones can lead to elevations in blood pressure. Well, kindness hormones have the exact opposite effect. They reduce blood pressure. The main kindness hormone is oxytocin. You know, it's the reproductive hormone, but that's only one part of its role. It's called a cardioprotective hormone. It plays a huge role in cleaning and protecting the cardiovascular system. It actually parks on the lining of the blood vessels. And I say park, it's like, you know, a vehicle parks in a parking bay. Well, it turns out there's billions of parking bays specifically for the kindness hormone that line our blood vessels. And so the kindness hormone parks on the lining of the blood vessels, and it's produced in abundance because of how kindness feels. So we produce it because of how kindness feels. Turn a wee tap on, out comes the kindness hormones. They park, and it causes a little fancy chemical reaction that leads to a reduction in tension in the walls of the blood vessels. And as they reduce in tension, they expand, they go, and they dilate. And now the heart doesn't have to push as hard to get the blood through. So the heart says, oh, this is easy. And the heart releases some of its pressure, chills out a little bit, and that causes a reduction in blood pressure. So that's one of the main ways why kindness hormones are cardioprotective, because they reduce blood pressure as opposed to stress hormones, which elevate blood pressure, so that you can see that opposite effect. When the kindness hormones goes up, then the blood, not only the stress hormones come down, but the blood pressure comes down as well as a consequence, because of how they act directly on the lining of our blood vessels.
Thank you. I literally got my homework from what you just shared. I can see myself already feeling into, that was just beyond profound for myself personally. In moments of stress, the antithesis of that is actually kindness. And I can see when I'm in stressful situations, and in fact, the stress is just a perceived stress. And it's actually oftentimes got nothing to do with the third party or whoever that is on the other side of the table. But generally, I act out in an unkind way, in a bit more selfish way, because I'm like processing stuff and I'm in my head, or I'm in my journal, doing my thing. And I just realize that that's the work, actually, for someone like myself. Is like, I'm stressed, and this opportunity is here to assist me, as you so kindly put it, to potentially go against the grain of just, you know, being like, being abrupt and actually affording some kindness in that situation. And that's reforming the groove. Dude, that was huge for me. Thank you so much for sharing it and articulating it that way. That was really crystal clear. And I love just how, yeah, it just made so much sense. It made so much sense. Some of those cardiac...
Oh, thank you for your kindness.
got you. So from there, the heart, does that then, I know aging, like you mentioned, another benefit is it's slowing down aging. So is the heart, the good mental state, the good heart, the good cardiovascular, is that a big sort of like two key factors that then bleed into longevity from there?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, some of the anti-aging effects, there's a number of different ways that kindness hormones actually counteract the aging effects of stress hormones, because we know that chronic stress ages us. So if kindness hormones are having opposite effects, then you can actually see why they're slowing it down. In fact, one of the studies on aging took cells from our skin that make up 95% of our skin and put them under stress in the lab and recognized that the stress effects on these cells was causing them to age. In fact, scientists can measure this by measuring the increase in levels of what are called free radicals. You know, free radicals is the things that cause oxidation. So if you leave an apple on a table for a week or 2 weeks, you'll notice that the apple will wrinkle. Mm-hmm. Now, what's causing that is oxidation. Mm-hmm. To a scientist like myself, what causes the oxidation is free radicals. Mm-hmm. We call it oxidative stress. Mm-hmm. Everyone else, you know, if you're referring to cellular processes, it's called oxidative stress. But in everyday language, it's called oxidation. Mm-hmm. So an apple ages and wrinkles because of oxidation, mm-hmm. and it's caused by free radicals. Exactly the same thing happens in our bodies as well. We wrinkle and age as well. Fortunately, it takes a heck of a lot longer than it does for an apple. And that's because we produce antioxidants. And an antioxidant is just something that's anti-oxidation. It cancels it out. It negates it, basically. Now, one of the major antioxidants in the body is the kindness hormone, oxytocin. It's a huge antioxidant activity. And scientists demonstrated this on the aging process of cells. by putting these cells under pressure in the lab, and they aged. In other words, they produced free radicals really quickly. Did the identical experiment, but this time they put some kinase hormone and they put some oxytocin. The levels of free radicals, i.e. the aging process, dropped through the floor. Dramatic slowing of the aging of the cells in the presence of the kinase hormone. Dramatic drop. I mean, substantial reduction in levels of free radicals, which cause the oxidation aging. Massive reduction. And the only difference was a few drops of the kinase hormone. Now, here's a really cool thing. You can't eat or drink the kinase hormone. The only way to get it in your skin.
Damn it. I was going to ask you, what's the best way to administer this to me?
You can't put it in a product, unfortunately.
Where's my pill?
I think this is nature guiding us. You know, I call this nature's catch 22. You can't get the benefits of kindness unless you're actually genuine in meaning what you do, because the only way you produce the kindness hormone is through feeling it. And the only way to feel it is if you mean it. So you have to mean it to feel it. So I call that nature's catch 22. Nature has it seemed inbuilt into us that you can't get that effect unless you actually mean it. So what happens in the skin cells is that dramatic slowing down of the effect. The only way to get the kindness hormone into the skin is to produce it. So the best way to produce it is through how kindness feels. There is other ways, you know, like emotion, close emotional contact, empathy, compassion, any close caring contact produces the kindness hormone as well. But kindness is one of the ways that generates it. But whatever way you produce it, you can't eat it or drink it. You have to produce it. And so the way to slow down aging, or one of the ways to slow down aging, to counteract the effects of chronic stress is, call it chronic kindness, you know, just be kind, but you have to mean it. And the only way, because the only way you're going to get the effects is if you mean it, because you have to mean it to feel it, and you have to feel it to produce the kindness hormone that has these anti-aging effects.
Oh, I love that. That makes so much sense. And it's so inspiring to feel into what's possible. I really, really, really.
I mean, I've been practicing this for 107 years.
I was gonna say you guys didn't know that David's 107, but you, I'm glad you went there. The inspiration is now through the roof.
Subtract 56 from that.
I'm still looking for that pill. No, I'm kidding. it's amazing, and I love the fact that you alluded to this as well. The empathy and the compassion that comes from there, it improves our relationships, which is the fourth benefit you mentioned in the book, which, you know, for someone like myself, connection is my highest value, which probably speaks to why I probably set kindness as an intention for a whole year. it's something that I literally believe, you know, even getting a bit down the rabbit hole, you know, so much of addiction even, you know, is a lack of connection, in my humble opinion. And that connection can be connection to ourselves, a spiritual connection, connection to our friends and family, loved ones around us. I think today, especially with the digital world, the online space, it can, like, there is a great connection. Like, obviously, you know, we're doing a podcast, I'm able to connect with someone on the other side of the planet. It's 10 a.m. where you are. It's 9 p.m. where I am. What is actually going on? It's incredible that we have this ability to connect via the digital. But at the same time, it's not the same. And like when I heard you say you've got to kind of mean it, there's something about the physical that's just, it's the physical, you know, it's the way nature designed it. And so you mentioned that kindness is, you know, it's this thing that builds connection. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, so kindness is like the doorway into connection. And you can do it even online. So it's a little bit more difficult to connect than it is face-to-face, because we are wired to face-to-face, because think of the evolution of the human species. The ability to do Zoom calls is something that's happened at like one nanosecond in terms of the whole recorded history span of time. Totally. So we're wired for contact, but you can facilitate in other ways. You know, even when you're doing a Zoom call or any FaceTime or any other, you know, software you use, one of the ways we can do it is to cultivate appreciation, gratitude while we're doing it. Like right now, I'm very grateful for the fact that you're so easy to chat to, and it feels that we've been friends for years. And I'm very grateful for that, and because that's making it easier for me to communicate. And that little gratitude that I'm feeling makes me feel more connected to you than I would do had I not been feeling that. So there's little tools, little ways that we can enter the door of connection and other ways, the variants of kindness that help to generate that feeling of connection, even when we're not face-to-face kind of thing. But overwhelmingly, things like kindness and gratitude, research shows that off the scale, they generate that sense of connection. And that comes back to how we started this conversation. The kindness hormone is actually also referred to as the connection hormone. The gene for the kindness hormone is the gene for, you can also call it the gene for the connection hormone. We are wired to connect, and it's why we're so driven sometimes to get people to like us, because if we feel that someone doesn't like us, deep in the human psyche and deep in our genome is that perception that this is a threat to my survival, because we need to connect. And if they don't like me, then we're not going to connect here. And that's a little thing that gets in many of our heads. We think, I need to please them. I need to get them to like me. But in actual fact, what we learn as we go through life, and this is a big part of what self-esteem is, or self-love, is the way to deepen a connection is to truly be yourself and not to try to get the person to like you, but try to display, to take off these masks, you know, these metaphorical covers that we, you know, that prevent us from being ourselves, you know, and actually be fully the person that we are. And then connection is more genuine. So it's a little like tweak that sometimes we go through our lives that take us decades to realize. I say that I wrote a book on called This I Heart Me, and I wrote it for myself. You know, it's one of my most successful books, and it's because it took me the longest I've ever taken to write a book. And I wrote it because I was struggling with self-esteem, with self-love. And for me, it was that a big shift for me was the recognition that is something we're driven to get people to like us, because and so we present a version of ourselves that we think, oh, they'll like me there if I change my hair, or they'll like me better if I agree with them, or they'll like me better if X, Y, and Z. But in actual fact, we're not really being ourselves. So we might get a momentary connection, but it won't really last that long. It won't be really deep. But to get a real deep, proper connection, you've actually got to say, you know, I'm going to stop showing up as these false versions and truly be that which I am. And then you'll find that connections are so much deeper. Some people might vacate your life because maybe they also needed a more superficial connection, but you'll find that your connections will actually deepen. So the best way to truly get that connection is actually to show up at your own party. In other words, to show up as yourself in the grandest, truest, most honest version of yourself, you know. And that's been a huge lesson for me in my life. But it's part of what kindness is. It's self-kindness then, is that recognition and willingness to be yourself.
I love that.
I don't know if I answered the, I forgot.
You did, you totally answered the question. And actually what it dropped in for me really powerfully as well was, you know, I've been tuning a lot into Brené Brown's work, and she talks about how vulnerability is strength. And that's like, and it was the hardest thing for her to accept, because vulnerability is strength. And she was like, anything could be strength. Why vulnerability? But as you're saying that, you know, shedding the mask, dropping into our authenticity, that takes personal vulnerability, that self-kindness to be raw, to be honest and be open. But that sort of saying that we're stronger together, you know, power in numbers, and actually being vulnerable allows us to connect. And that potentially is where the real strength lies. Us is stronger together. That's huge for me. Thank you so much. You answered it, Anton.
Can I add something to that? Then one of my most profound moments of transformation was talking live on stage. Shortly, I'd lost my dog. It was only 2 years old, Oscar, yellow Labrador. And he was only 2 years old. He had bone cancer, very young for a dog to develop bone cancer. We tried everything to save his life. The months leading up to his passing away, I developed an extraordinary connection that I didn't know was possible with an animal, because I'd never had it in that sense. When you have what feels like the parental responsibility for an animal, and we really connected in a way that I didn't know was possible. And I found his loss really painful. And he actually arrived in my life 2 days before I started working on that self-love book. And he passed away 2 days before I finished, as if he was in my life for that that purpose. And I remember the book had just come out, and I found myself on stage, several hundred people, big auditorium in London, in the UK. And I didn't mean to, but I started talking about Oscar, it was relevant to something that I was talking about at the time. And I got really emotional and I started to cry in front of all these people, like big intense stage lights on me, and I couldn't stop crying. And you know how in the moment when you get really emotional and you know people are looking at you, you try not to cry.
So
you
go.
And at one point the idea entered my mind that, you know, I'm overly concerned right now with how they'll perceive me. I'm supposed to be the teacher. This is technically a book launch event. If people see how much of a mess I am, no one will read the book. They'll think, well, I'm not reading that guy's book. He's supposed to be, you know, this guy that's written all these books.
Yeah.
He's supposed to have it together. I'm not bloody reading his book. And that's what was, funnily, in that moment, that's what was driving me trying not to cry. And then I had this moment of, you know, just clarity. Damn it, but that's not who I am. Right in this moment, I will not tarnish the memory of my love and connection with Oscar by pretending that I don't feel that way. So I just let go. And I thought, it doesn't matter what the most important thing in my evolution isn't who buys my books or how people perceive me. The most important thing right now is me just being who I need to be. And that for me felt intensely vulnerable. And I just started crying on stage and I said, sorry, I wept for I don't know how long. And then a woman ran up on the stage and gave me a big hug, and then the audience all started clapping and stuff. Mm. And what was astonishing is my book sold out in like 2 minutes. my publisher, Hay House, were sending people out into London to buy stocks from shops because they'd ran out in literally 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And that was the biggest lesson for me, that it doesn't matter about people's perception. It matters about how you actually are being in the moment. And for many of us, and certainly for me included, and thanks for bringing the conversation this way, because this is was a big lesson for me, is vulnerability was my doorway into being myself, recognizing that it doesn't matter what people are thinking. This is how I feel. I feel really vulnerable and open and scared right now because, you know, 700 people, I think, looking at me. And the lights are on my face, you know, and I'm crying here. But you know what? This is how I need to be in this moment. And it was an immensely transformational experience. And many people actually said that seeing my vulnerability as a teacher and crying actually made it feel more, the teaching more real. Like it's okay. They don't have to pretend that you're perfect. It's okay to feel messed up. And that's actually part of the journey. And many people actually reported after that my crying on stage made them feel more validated themselves and made them feel that I can get there. If he can be crying and a mess and he's writing a book, then so can I, kind of thing. And that was huge for me. I would never have learned that lesson had I not that vulnerable moment not taken place.
Oh, David, thank you so much for sharing that. And sorry for Oscar. It's super woo-woo and poetic how he came 2 days before and then 2 days before he left. That's full on. And I'm in awe of your story. Thank you so much for sharing that. Despite the tragedies in it, because in that moment, you know, you stepped into the transformation that the book was then, you know, embodying, basically. You embodied the transformation. Like, that's just, and I'm not surprised it sold out. And you actually had the courage to just go there with yourself, to allow yourself to be, and that was you hiding yourself. That is, man, thank you so much for sharing that. That is beyond profound. That's woo woo. I love that. It's really awesome. Thank you so much for sharing that.
I wasn't actually expecting to share that. It's funny, the conversation just sort of popped in. It's funny how that happens, isn't it?
Actually, that was going to be a point, you know, leading into the next point, which I know kindness is contagious, which is the fifth point. I was actually going to thank you because you thanked me before for the flow of the conversation, but I want to thank you for the body work that you've invested yourself in. Like, this conversation on kindness has got me zinging, and it's something that I've been like, thankfully there's someone out there like yourself that's committed and dedicated themselves to the research around this and gone. I've got an engineering brain, for those that tune into the podcast know me a little bit. Like, I like to go to the nth degree things, and you talking about the chemicals and the hormones and how you're the pathways are opening up and we're cementing down other pathways. It's like, dude, this is my jam. I love that someone's done that work. So kindness right back at you, gratitude right back at you. Thank you so much for the way you do. And on that note, kindness is contagious. The fifth benefit, absolutely. Tell us about it.
It's hugely good. In fact, you know, the R number of kindness is somewhere between 4 and 5. You know, it's extraordinarily. But what's amazing is research at Harvard and Yale found that kindness really does generate a ripple effect. And it goes out on average to what's called 3 social steps. Now, what that means is, let's use the R number of five as an example, right? So R numbers vary from, you know, upper, it's very common, very in popular language at the moment, the R number, it really means the reproducibility rate, the contagiousness of something.
So let's use,
So let's use the number 5 as a representative example. So taking the research at Harvard and Yale, that it goes out to 3 social steps, what that means, let's say today, you or anyone watching or listening does an act of kindness for someone. Then because of how you made that person feel, if you were to follow them around for the rest of the day, which I assume you wouldn't do, but if you did have to follow them around for the rest of the day, what you would notice, because of how you made them feel, that person will likely be kind or kinder to 5 people as a consequence of how you made them feel. Now, that's what the R number of 5 means. But those 5 people, they're at what's called 1 social step away from you. Kindness goes to 3. So what you'll find, if you were to follow those 5 around with a wee drone for the rest of the day, which you obviously wouldn't do, but if you did, then you would find that each of those 5 would also be kind or kinder to 5 people over the course of the rest of the day. So that's now 25, and that 25 is at 2 social steps. And kindness goes to 3. If you had a swarm of drones and you tracked all their behaviours and movements for that the rest of the day, you'll find each of those 25 will also be kind or kinder to 5 people. So what you'll actually get is 125 people benefiting from an act of kindness on average. You know, sometimes it will be more, sometimes it will be less, and it'll depend on the person. But as an average, you could estimate about 125 people at 3 social steps. Most of those 125 you'll never meet in your life. But yet they're somehow benefiting, they're gaining from something, that one thing that you did for that one person. And it's due to that ripple effect. It's like if you drop a pebble in a pond and it goes plop and it creates a wee wave. But if you follow the wave out as it moves out over the pond, you'll notice at the other side of the pond, there's a wee lily pad doing that. The lily pad doesn't know why it's doing that, but it's doing that because of the wave.
Yeah.
But what set the wave in motion was a pebble dropped in a pond. Now, that's a metaphor for an act of kindness. And kindness is the pebble, and the pond is the fabric of human society. And the lily pad, it's not a lily pad being lifted, it's people's spirits. Yeah. Because they're on the receiving end of the wave of an act of kindness that was set in motion from that one thing that you did. And it didn't even have to be a big thing. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes we get confused thinking, if I'm going to be kind, I have to do something big and noticeable. It's actually the multitude of the small things that we do in every day, the little compliments we pay, the little moments of just presence where you just be in the moment for someone who just has to say something and talk, and just to let them feel validated, the holding a door for someone. It's the little momentary things that most of us do several times a day without realizing they were actually moments of kindness. But these are the things that set in motion all these little ripples. And I say this because I think so many of us feel many times that we are not important, that we're not valuable, we're not making a difference. But I'm telling you, you really are. Every little thing that you do that's in service, it's a momentary benefit to another person, is setting off these ripples. And I think it's that changes the world more than anything else, because that's the wave that's moving through the fabric of human society.
David, so what is your inspired evolution? What do you see the world as, like, if you had your imagination set free into the world, inspired evolution, what is possible with kindness? What's your hope? What's your inspiration?
For me, it's more people dissolving the clouds by recognizing that kindness is actually what will actually mold the fabric of human society for the better. And more people becoming aware of the actual health effects of kindness and the importance of kindness. And I think that recognition begins to burn off our little storm fronts anyway. And I think if more and more of us in the world understood this, then you'll find that kindness will actually play a bigger role in not just what we do, but the way in which we do the things that we do. And that's when we see a really big shift. You know, I've spoken for a number of corporations over the last year, unexpectedly, since all the lockdowns happened, since the beginning of the pandemic. I had never spoken. I think I'd done a couple of Zoom calls in my life. And all of a sudden, it was Mental Health Awareness Year last year, and the theme was kindness. And because I'd written on kindness, I got all these companies over the last year and a half have asked me to speak on kindness. And some really, really big multinational countries. And what I love about it is they have made decisions to bring kindness more into the heart of what they do.
Yeah, they do.
How they do. Some of the effects aren't necessarily visible yet, but they are actually happening within some of these large corporations. In the first instance, just in how they relate to how they treat their staff, how they make their staff feel included, and how they promote diversity within the company, and how they're making little shifts to make people feel included and validated, and to increase the health and well-being of the staff, to take mental health more seriously. These are all little things that are happening within these. And then it's also about how they impact on each other in the wider scheme. And if it's happening in corporations, then it's happening in the world as well. Mm-hmm. And so I see more and more of us recognizing the importance of kindness. And for me, one of the reasons why I teach about and write about it is because if we realize there's science available, for many people, it brings it home a little bit more strongly.
Myself included.
Yeah. Yeah, well, me too, actually. You know, we often write about what we need to know. Mm. You know, I've written 3 books on kindness because I needed to immerse myself in that consciousness. Mm. And that's what I needed as a male based on my background. I needed that to facilitate that kind of movement in myself as well.
Yeah, I love that. Wow. And so in there, I definitely can't leave the audience without asking this question of you. What are some of the access points for us to start imbuing more and more kindness into our day? What are some of the easiest ways we can move the needle for kindness? I heard certain things in there, like holding the door open. You know, there was my example of potentially the elderly lady that was helping me sort of wrap, like, you know, helping yeah. each other out. Even just actually your transformation story where you demonstrated kindness to yourself in that moment when you're on stage with that immense vulnerability, was a kindness probably afforded to others as well, because they, like you said, gave them permission to be who they wanted to be. So that being kind to self is being kind to others. Tell me, like, is there a key access point, or are there some of your favorite go-tos in terms of how to cultivate kindness?
Yeah, I think we'll notice them differently in our own lives. Mm-hmm. I go into a day, and even if I'm going somewhere, I'm going to be out. Let's say I have to go to the shop or I have to do something. I might say to myself, how can I be kind? How can I be a good person? Or even how can I be nice? Yeah. You know, and you'll find that, you know, a shop assistant sometimes might just show a wee bit of politeness. So I'll reciprocate and just allow that momentary connection. So she's or he is reaching out to me and I'm just reciprocating. We're 2 human beings and I'm just putting a little bit back there, right back at you kind of thing. Just that momentary bit of connection. I smile and say hello to people, almost everyone when I pass them. You know, some people give me funny looks, but I do it anyway. You know, a little thing I do sometimes is I call it pinging kindness. Yeah. If I pass people and maybe I see someone cross the street or something and they look sad or stressed, I put my finger in my pocket and I just go ping, and I imagine a little ball of light of kindness, and I just imagine it floating through the air like augmented reality and landing right in their heart.
Yeah.
And just I see that light just spreading with them, and I know this sounds woo-woo, but every now and then you see someone just suddenly smiling and it's just such a cool little thing. I do it all the time, you know. Yeah. If I can't just make eye contact, I just ping like that. Yeah. And I do it a lot. But in terms of other access, these are access points when you're not interacting. But I just say to myself, how can I be kind today? And what you're doing, you're looking for opportunities that present themselves, because most of the kindnesses you'll do will not be intentional things like, I'm going to go out today and I'm going to hold 4 doors open. I'm going to go out and I'm going to pay 3 compliments. It's not really, it is, some kindness can work that way, but most kindnesses will be in response to a situation that presents itself. Yeah. That's the majority of our kindness. So look out for each situation and just ask yourself, how can I just be nice? How can I be a good person? How can I be kind in this moment? And sometimes it will be, well, for my own mental health, I have to extract myself from the situation. And that's being kind to myself. So it's for me, there's multiple access points and they vary from person to person, but I just have that in my consciousness as a practice. You know, there's also kindfulness meditation practice you can do, like the Tibetan Buddhist loving kindness or metta, it's called. These are all access points for daily ways of building the sentiment in yourself as well.
I love that. Thank you so much for sharing that. And actually, one of the amazing, all of it was amazing, but one of the things that really struck me in there was sometimes the kind thing is to remove yourself from the situation. That is not like you would think kindness is in the act of doing and presenting and giving. And it's like actually removing yourself can be a self-kindness and a kindness to the situation. I think that's really profound in itself as well. One of the things I just like to offer up in this space is one of my... This was one of the most transformative sort of journeys that I went on was I did this thing for myself, and now I sort of coach some of my coachees into it when they're going through certain instances. And I call it the gratitude challenge. But for me, it really started off as a gratitude challenge, but that's what it's morphed into now. I went on this mission for a while to just collect 15 thank yous a day. And those that have tuned into the podcast and regular kind of will probably know this story. But I would just go out of my way to just be like, you know what, today... great day, I'm gonna get 15 thank yous. Yeah, and it was just this like agenda that I had, and nobody knew that I was doing this. It was I knew that I was doing this, but it was like similar to how you said, I smiled at people and it got to be great. Like I remember I used to live in this office, like in this really like apartment tower, and like I'd be up to like 9 for the day or something. I was trying to get to 15. Yeah, so I'd be like holding the door open at the elevator. And I'm in a really long foyer, like I'm like 50 meter long foyer, and people are coming and I'm like holding the door open, you know, just like this real creepy dude, you know, just come on, you know? And then like people would jump in the elevator and they're like, thank you, and you're like, no worries, thank you, 10, you know, and so I definitely went out of my way to sort of cultivate gratitude in there, but it definitely worked, and I was doing all these little kooky things, or like all these sort of kooky things, but it works. And you know, I even found, even just recently actually following your work, I was inspired, and I've found you mentioned some of the Buddhist practices. There's this one practice that they have, which is, you know, you're walking down the street and every person you see, tell them you love them. And I found that a bit much, like being vulnerable. I found that a bit like, you know, I love you, I don't know you. It's like literally. And I tried it a couple of times, but it felt really inauthentic. It was just like, oh, I'm not sure. And maybe there's a whole body of work for me to uncover and look into. Why wouldn't I love a stranger? Maybe I can and I should. I don't know. I digress. It's not about me. But there's this, the access point that I found was have a nice day. I really hope you have a really nice day. And I really hope. And so I'm just sitting there in my head and all these people, and instead of having to say, I love you, like I found a much more like a shallower way to find, like to grant that blessing. But I genuinely could feel, and I remember you saying earlier in the podcast, how important it is to genuinely feel it. I was genuinely going, I hope you have a really nice day. Like standing there waiting for my coffee. I hope you have a really nice day. I hope you have a really nice day. And I hope you have a really nice day. And exactly how you described, you start zinging. Like it makes no sense, but after listening to this podcast, it makes total sense. But do you know what I mean? Like you start singing.
Yeah. And here's the thing. So does everyone else. I did an experiment, you know, and it's funny because I explained this to my publisher once. I was in the office, I think, and they didn't believe me because they said, everybody does this. And I thought, no, this was about in 2005, no, 2006. I was living in a town near London at the time. I'm Scottish. I live in Scotland. I'm back in Scotland now. But I was living just outside London in a little town. And I decided that I'm going to say have a nice day to every single shop assistant, in every single shop. And I thought, I wonder if it will catch on. Mm. And so literally every time I was in, I was, you know, buying a sandwich. And at the end, I go, have a nice day. And the other person's like, okay, well, you too. I was in a clothes shop, have a nice day. And I did it for weeks, literally weeks, and nothing. And then all of a sudden, it was a tipping point. Everyone was doing it. All of a sudden, I walked into one of the shops and there was a person in front of me, and the shop assistant, who's never served me before, was actually saying, have a nice day to that person. So it actually caught on in the stuff. And then I went to another shop and the shop assistant was wishing me a nice day.
Yeah.
And I'd never met them either. And all, it was like a tipping point. And I told my publisher that I did that. I created that in that town. They go, oh, you know, you absolutely, there's no way you can. Everyone says that. Not in that town, they don't. But I started, I was literally relentless. Even when I bought a coffee, if I was in a restaurant, I was having a nice day at the end when I paid my bill and I said to the waitress or the waiter, I was relentless, literally for a couple of months. And all of a sudden, it was just a tipping point and everyone, all the shops were doing it.
Critical mass was achieved. Yeah.
Ripple effect. That. But it literally took a couple of months. And then all of a sudden, literally in the space of a couple of days, everyone, all the chop assistants in the whole place were doing it.
Oh,
it was I did that as an intentional experiment. And I can tell you, no one was doing it at all.
Yeah.
This is 2006, it was 15 years ago. And I was relentlessly seeing it in every single shop, every interaction I had. And then all of a sudden, everyone was doing it. Amazing.
I love it. I love it. When we works. It's best. Oh, David. Funny. Wow, man. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much for your kindness, fundamentally, for being here today, sharing it with us, all the principles behind kindness and why it helps us be just better humans, be the best versions of ourselves, and ultimately just how we can live with so much more joy and fulfillment. I've drunk the Kool-Aid, seriously. Like I said, I set the intention last year and it was way harder than I thought it was ever going to be. But understanding these principles in terms of, okay, like it's just a matter of, and I love the metaphor you shared with us, you know, there's always light. It's just the storm fronts that we're interacting with and potentially needing to just slow down a little bit ourselves or get out of our own way a little bit so that we can dissipate our storm fronts, so that we can see the light and the brightness and the shiningness of everyone within here. And so thank you so much for just shining this hope and of kindness into our lives here today. Thank you on behalf of myself, the Inspired Evolution Tribe and audience tuning in. We are just so grateful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. My pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me to have this conversation. It's been amazing. Really great hanging out.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this amazing episode of The Inspired Evolution. Without you, The Inspired Evolution Tribe, this podcast would not be what it is today. Thank you so much for your love and your support. Thank you so much for being so inspired to evolve. It's truly inspiring. If you haven't already done so, please subscribe to The Inspired Evolution on YouTube, the home of The Inspired Evolution's video podcast. We release inspiring conversations such as this every week, along with guided meditations and empowering insights, all designed to help you grow and evolve. Honestly, your subscription on YouTube to the channel helps us out a great deal. And one of the other benefits, if you're having any insights or shifts from these episodes that you want to chat about, or if you'd like to leave myself or the guest a message, please do so in the comments on YouTube. I truly look forward to hearing from you. And as always, Tribe, remember to stay inspired and keep evolving.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.